This message comes from NPR sponsor Acorn TV. Acorn TV is brilliant television told brilliantly. From charmingly cozy mysteries to daringly dark dramas, visit acorn.tv for a 30-day free trial with promo code NPR. Acorn TV. Brilliant.
A warning, this episode contains discussions of sexual assault and sexual abuse. If you grew up watching Nickelodeon, or if your kids did, you may already know all about Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. The docuseries examines the working environment of the young stars who fueled the network's rise.
The series pays particularly close attention to allegations of sexual harassment, manipulation, and other problematic behavior by showrunner Dan Schneider, who was in charge of shows like iCarly, Sam and Cat, and the long-running series All That. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Acorn TV. Acorn TV isn't just good, it's brilliant. With exceptional television from around the world, their romances are more charming, their mysteries cozier, their noirs more gripping, and their comedies cleverer. More clever? Oh, you get it. Acorn TV is brilliant stories told brilliantly. Visit acorn.tv for a 30-day free trial with promo code NPR. So, in a nutshell, Acorn TV. Brilliant. This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching, so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework. Support for NPR and the following message come from Sattva. Sattva luxury mattresses are every bit as elegant as the most expensive brands, but because they're sold online, they're about half the price. Visit SAATVA.com/NPR and save an additional $200.
It's just the two of us today. Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV is a four-part docuseries that originally aired on Investigation Discovery, but is now streaming on Max. The series is essentially about two main issues. One is Dan Schneider, a writer, producer, and creator who had this enormous amount of power at Nickelodeon from the 1990s and the 2000s when he first worked on the sketch show All That and then created hit series like The Amanda Show, all the way up to 2018 when he parted ways with the network. Over his time there, the documentary says there were multiple internal investigations and multiple complaints about Schneider. He was accused of gender discrimination in pay and hiring, which he denies. He was also accused of creating a hostile work environment by doing things like verbally abusing colleagues or asking for massages on set.
Something that was always really uncomfortable was walking onto set and seeing who Dan had talked into giving him a massage.
In a video interview released after the documentary aired, Schneider did, it seems, apologize for the massages. There's also been a re-examination of a lot of the content of the shows he was making and how often the jokes seem like efforts to sneak pretty vulgar sex jokes into a kid's show and make the young actors participate. The other focus of the documentary is Drake Bell, who was one of the stars of Drake and Josh. In the documentary, he talks publicly for the first time about sexual abuse and assault he says he experienced as a teenager at the hands of Brian Peck, a dialogue coach who worked extensively in TV, including at Nickelodeon.
I often look back at that time and wonder how in the world I survived. I remember all of the abusive events, but everything outside of that is very blurry to me.
Peck pleaded no contest to two charges and was sentenced to 16 months in jail back in 2004. I think rather than sort of run down all of the ugly details of these allegations, which are really clearly laid out in the documentary via a lot of interviews, what we're interested in talking about is how this fits into these larger questions about protecting kids who work in whatever capacity in entertainment. It does come up with kids who are actors, but there are also kids who are on reality TV, like they're on Super Nanny or whatever. And there are kids who are deeply involved in influencer culture, either because they have their own social media presence or because they're featured on their parents' channels. All that to say, Aisha, here's my starting question, I guess. Mm-hmm. So we are recording this on Friday, March 22nd. So that's our reference point when we say now. But there is a little bit of a why now in the sense that, you know, Quiet on Set has touched off this conversation again, but this is not a new thing. And it doesn't only happen there at Nickelodeon. Do you think anything about Nickelodeon is different from kids' other experiences in show business, or do you think it's just the biggest example, and so right at the moment it's getting the most attention?
I don't even know if it's necessarily the biggest example. Maybe it's the biggest example we, the public, are aware of. But
right.
If you've watched the series, obviously Nickelodeon, but Disney was the rival. Those were the two big networks for kids when I was growing up in the 90s and into the 2000s. But because of who, I guess, who they were able to get and who they were able to talk to, this is what we wind up with. Like, I am sure there are plenty of stories about Disney as well. And let's also be clear that, like, for at least when I was growing up, Nickelodeon was seen as the sort of edgier version of kids' TV. Mm-hmm. You know, Disney was, for the most part, pretty, pretty wholesome. And, like, my parents were totally fine with us watching whatever was on the Disney Channel. When it came to Nickelodeon, there were definitely shows that we were not allowed to watch, my sister and I.
Right.
What's interesting about this documentary is the fact that it's not just about what went on behind the scenes, but also when we look back on some things that were happening to these kid stars on screen, you have kids who are being put into these adult positions that, as a kid, if you're watching it, you don't know. It goes completely over your head. But as someone, one of the talking heads in this documentary says, it's like, but if it's in the show, who is this for? The show aimed at kids, who is this for?
Exactly.
And so I think that's kind of what makes Nickelodeon maybe a little bit more unique.
Yeah.
At least I don't remember things like that happening in Disney shows when I was a kid.
Right. No, I think that's right. And for people who are sort of like wondering what we're talking around a little bit here, and this is, you know, you can see this in the documentary, but, you know, there are some scenes, for example, of a fairly tame example would be like this scene of Ariana Grande where she is lying back on a bed and sort of squirting herself with a water bottle down her chest. It's very, like, it feels very sexualized. And she's a kid when this is happening. But it's something that, you know, would kind of be in a swimsuit video if it was an adult woman. And it looks clearly like it's supposed to be mimicking a sexual behavior. And there are some that are like more vulgar than that. There's one where she's kind of like fondling this potato and it's really gross and tacky. And that was the one where I thought it was really interesting that Mark Summers, who a lot of people know as a Nickelodeon personality, I think that's the one he was watching when he was like, this aired on Nickelodeon? Because I think his whole side of Nickelodeon, which was more the game show side and some of that stuff, wasn't even necessarily as much paying attention maybe to the Dan Schneider side of Nickelodeon.
Right.
But one thing that you brought up that I thought was really interesting is this article that you and I both recently read about influencers. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the New York Times did an investigation on the very, very lucrative industry of young kid influencers, and specifically young girls and their moms. Now, there are other iterations of this, but the article kind of says, you know, in most of our findings, the majority of the people who are doing this are moms and their young daughters. And it was just, it's really fascinating and really disgusting to think about, but it just seems like another version of the stage mom in Hollywood has been transferred from there to the internet and to social media. And so you have moms who are, you know, they're starting accounts for their kids who are all underage. They control them, but some of these parents are doing worse things than others. They're not just posting photos that could be construed as suggestive, whether it's, you know, a girl in a bikini or wearing a lot of makeup, you know, the typical sort of pageant stuff that we would see. But also some moms are selling their child's possessions that they've worn to men they don't know. They are letting them interact and kind of do not quite OnlyFans, but a version of OnlyFans where you can like pay them money and like have a one-on-one. Yeah. So like it's like an entire industry. And I think to think of that, about that in conjunction with this series, Quiet on Set, and then all these other sort of things we've heard about what child performers have had to endure because they're seen as cash cows. And it's like that comes first over the well-being and the best interest of these kids who are not developed and don't understand what's going on. It's just kind of disturbing.
It is. And I think it's interesting because what you mentioned about, you know, allowing inappropriate kind of communications from, as you said, men they don't know, is sort of the more shocking stuff, but there's also a more pedestrian kind of the kid feeling that the kid has to perform all the time and has to sort of live their life in a way that is good for content. It's one thing to know that, you know, kids have a very hard time when they're on set, but there's something about this seems like that plus they're performing and those problems of being on set are able to be kind of translated to the home environment.
Right.
You know, these documentaries also, Alex Winter, the actor and documentarian, had a really good film a couple of years ago called Showbiz Kids, which I really thought was also excellent. And he interviewed a lot of people who had been child stars. And one of the things that I took away from that and from this is that so much depends on the parents. And it's not as simple as like involved parents are good and uninvolved parents are bad or the other way around.
Right.
It's just a matter of like, are these parents going to be sensitive enough to do you really want to be doing this? Yeah. Because one thing I felt, you know, watching Quiet on Set, and I felt this watching Showbiz Kids too, and reading about the influencers, is there's no way around the pressure that it creates when the kids' work as an entertainer is supporting the family.
Right. And I mean, I think what this kind of gets at is that really interesting tension because, you know, of course, there's the prototypical stage parent who, like, the kid clearly isn't into this, but, like, they're being forced to do it. And I think what this series and what other examples of this have shown is that sometimes the kids initially might start off really, really wanting to do this. Like, it is a passion. I think that that is hard to square away because some of the parents, you know, including Drake Bell's dad, who is interviewed extensively and quite on the set, he talks about how, like, he didn't want to stand in the way of his son's dream.
So I went to production and said, you know, I really am very uncomfortable with this guy, Brian Peck, always being around my son. I go, I don't see anything abnormal, but it just doesn't, I don't have a good feeling.
Mm-hmm. And even though he had all of these reasons, these legitimate reasons to be wary of the man who would eventually be convicted of abusing him, he still eventually was like, okay, I got to let you go. I got to let you do what you want to do. And I think that that is something that we're still kind of reckoning with is this idea of like kids want to perform, but it's also like, what are you doing as a parent to make sure that they are protected? And I think most of the time or a lot of times in these instances, that is not what's happening. It starts off that way. They are protective, but like eventually you get sucked in very easily. I mean, that was even very evident in Leaving Neverland too, the documentary about Michael Jackson. You're sitting down and listening to these parents of the kids or now adults who accused Michael Jackson of abusing them. They talk about wanting to like fulfill their kids' dreams and being kind of like drawn into this world in a way that like you might not get drawn into other industries or other worlds in this way.
Well, in Quiet on Set, you keep hearing parents and they're adults now, but people who were the kids at the time talking about how one of the things that happens with somebody like Dan Schneider is that you're afraid to get on his bad side because of the amount of power that he had at Nickelodeon.
I always did my best to be a trooper. Never complain, because we knew being close to Dan could mean an extra level of success. It was important to be on his good side, and He made it known who was on his good side.
So it didn't feel to them like they could say, I don't like this, or I don't want to do this, or I'm not comfortable with this. Right. Many of them, I won't say none, but like many of them didn't feel comfortable doing that because of the ability that he had to, quote unquote, damage your career. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating to me to watch that, even outside of any kind of sexual or sexual harassment content, as a power issue. It was really interesting to me to think about that in the context of, yes, the Me Too movement, but also Mo Ryan's book, Burn It Down, which is all about toxic and abusive workplaces in Hollywood. And that same thing of, I don't want to say anything because it's going to affect my career. Yeah. And whether that's Harvey Weinstein wanting an actress to come meet him in a hotel, or it's a kid whose parent feels like, I'm not really comfortable having them do this.
Yeah.
Or a kid thinking, I'm not really comfortable wearing this outfit because it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's that question of power that recurs over and over again.
And I think what is really interesting about Quiet on Set is the way that it's not just about the physical harm or the danger of that, but also just, you know, being a young kid. And in the docuseries, they interview several Black cast members of various Nickelodeon shows, including Brian Hearn and Raquel Leigh Ballou. And they talk about sort of being the only or one of the only Black kids on those shows and feeling as though they were not prioritized and feeling as though they were, in some cases, actually kind of cast in these stereotypical characters as a kid. That's really hard to reckon with.
And also, I think it was clear that there was additional pressure on Brian Hearn's mother, because she talks about the fact that she was very accustomed to wanting to stand up for him and to step in when she felt like he was being treated differently or poorly. But again, you have all that pressure about, maybe if mom does this, then they won't like you, and then the kid will be angry at the mom, and they really know how to push on those internal tensions as well.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, I did try to tell his agent, because she called me. She's like, Tracy, come on. Do it for Brian. Just shut up. And I was like, yeah, but things are weird here.
And the other thing that I do want to touch on with you, you and I also talked about kind of other reality show type of environments. And you and I talked a little bit about Dance Moms, which I think we both watched some of.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was a dance kid. I did dance competitions for most of my young adulthood. And so I can sympathize with the kids who that's all you want to do and you love this. And when I watched Dance Moms, I was older and I was far out of that world, but it did resonate with me. And I think what shows like that sort of bring up is, like, yes, there are all the dangers of sexual abuse and things like that in that world. But there's also, these are kids who are just like learning how to be human. Mm-hmm. And having to do so under the harshest conditions. And what even, you know, Quiet on the Set really showed is that this is also about kids who are learning lessons they maybe shouldn't be learning so soon. If you're not familiar with Dance Moms, basically, the short of it is it ran for like several seasons on Lifetime. And it was about Abby Lee Miller, who was a studio, like a dance company head, who had her team of young girls, and their moms were, you know, the typical stage moms who were all trying to fight to get their daughter to have the solo or to have, you know, to have the main part in the group number. And when you go back and watch it, like, it's just so... She's mean. She is like Simon Cowell.
She's very mean.
But
she's
Simon Cowell, but to kids. Mm-hmm. These are kids who are 6, 7, 8, and she's berating them. She's saying, and she's also encouraging them to be mean to their competition. She's encouraging them to be mean to other people. Those are the kinds of lessons that, like, we should not be teaching kids. And kids don't have, like, the wisdom of age to really deal with that.
You can't do that because it looks like you're ungrateful that you were second. You're 8 now. You're not a baby anymore. Save your tears for the pillow. Understood?
And so it's just really fascinating to me to see how we're talking about all of these things when it comes to, like, especially abuse sexually. But I think also when we think about physical abuse or verbal and mental abuse, that is something that really raises the question that I think you and I both have is, like, do we really need child actors anymore? Should we be encouraging that?
I think that having child actors, having child performers, you know, it goes back for a long time. You know, you and I are both well aware of the Judy Garland story, right?
Yeah.
This has always been a very difficult setting for kids. But I think the way that people have always kind of coped with it was a combination of, like, well, as long as the kid says it's okay and the parents say it's okay— But one of the things you take away from Quiet on Set is that there are really perverse incentives for both parents and kids to say it's okay even when it's not okay.
Yeah.
And for nobody else to want to step in the case of Dan Schneider, he was a guy whose shows were extremely successful. And so the network doesn't have a lot of incentives to be proactive about the well-being of the kids. And what I think about when I think about Dance Moms, too, it's one thing to think about Ariana Grande looking at the footage of herself with like the potato or the water bottle or whatever. And I'm sure that that is painful. But I also think about if you're a kid who is on Dance Moms and forever running in reruns in perpetuity is a storyline where you are a brat and your mom is a jerk and your mom is being a jerk because of you. It's very hard to figure out a model of sort of consent that works for that. Like, how do you, as an 8-year-old, how do you consent to the treatment that you're going to get as a 30-year-old watching yourself be processed by strangers who are still able to watch, you know, the shows that you were on or the videos that you were in?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but it does feel to me like we are kind of in a, maybe a different moment. And I think maybe the social media influencer aspect of it all might help speed that up, because there are laws that are being passed to make sure that, at least from a financial standpoint, that like kids should have a certain amount of money put away for them that they are making from these ventures. But again, like, I do think that like the financial part is one thing. But what I remember watching various, you know, E, True Hollywood Story, VH1, Where Are They Now, Kid Stars, like those types of series, they always focused on the child stars as like having gone out of control, you know? It does feel like we're in a moment in the same way we are in a moment of talking about how we treated people like Lindsay Lohan and Janet Jackson and Britney Spears. It does feel like we're in a moment where we're now kind of more focused on the psychological harm that may have been committed against them, and not just the sort of wild stories that play out in the public of them acting out.
Not so much like these kids always wind up going out of control and just being, you know, wild child, whatever, like, oh, look at this Drew Barrymore or whatever.
Exactly.
But like, what is the system?
Yeah.
You know, what are the forces that are being exerted on these kids?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I do feel like we're in a different moment. I hope that some, like this show still like left a lot of questions for me, and it didn't answer all of them.
For sure.
I think, you know, the fact that they didn't really interrogate Drake Bell and his sort of own sort of troubles, including the fact that he was sentenced to probation for child endangerment. So this is something that maybe just to get him to talk about his own experiences as a kid, they probably glossed over a little bit. So it left a lot of questions. But I do think that it's important that this conversation is happening. And I do think maybe we don't need to have kids doing this.
Well, or just make cartoons. You know what I mean? Just make animated stuff. I mean, it's really hard to find a way that's going to make people feel comfortable. But yeah, I think the combination of, you know, as I said, that combination of sort of the Me Too stuff, the abusive workplace stuff, Jeanette McCurdy's book, which kind of predated this as a discussion of Nickelodeon and some of these problems, I think all put together, I agree with you. Maybe we are hitting an inflection point, and maybe that inflection point will start to make things to kind of explore at least alternatives for how to prevent this from being quite such a difficult situation for the kids who wind up in this situation. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. Aisha Harris, thank you so much for being here. This was a good talk.
Thanks, Linda.
This episode was produced by Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff and Jessica Reedy. Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Spark Cash Plus card, you earn unlimited 2% cash back on every purchase for your business. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus. Terms and conditions apply. This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you're carrying around a lot of stress, therapy is a safe space to get it off your chest. If you're considering therapy, give BetterHelp a try at BetterHelp.com/NPR to get 10% off your first month.
On Wildcard, the new podcast from NPR, you'll hear people like comedian Jenny Slate reflect on their lives. What is something you think about very differently today than you did 10 years ago?
Dressing, like not salad dressing. I've always loved it and I'll never stop. Dressing my body.
That's all part of the new game show Wildcard, only from NPR. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.